Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast, hosted by English language arts teacher Michelle Waters. Prepare to receive strategies, products, and expert advice tailored to help teachers build social awareness, student agency, and voice in their ELA classrooms.
Welcome to the Rethink ELA podcast. I'm your host, Michelle Waters, and I can't wait to share with you a way your students who love to talk can put their talents to use in your ELA classroom. My guest this week is Jennifer Dean, an English teacher at Leander Middle School, which is north of Austin, Texas. She earned her bachelor's degree in journalism, like I did, and went on to earn a master's degree in education before becoming a teacher. She served as a national research assistant and as a museum administrator. As an educator, Jennifer works to develop student voice while building community and family bonds through oral history storytelling. She is the founder of All Girls Considered, a podcast dedicated to helping inspire young girls and women tell their stories. With my background in journalistic storytelling and a passion for helping my students share their stories, I knew that I wanted to interview Jennifer as soon as I found her on Twitter. It took some time, with grad school, national boards, and my house burning down, but I have finally made this happen. Let's sit back and listen as Jennifer shares how she rethinks student voice in her classroom, how and why she started her school's podcast, and her tips to help you rethink your approach.
When it comes to reaching students through literature, finding reliable resources is challenging. Your search is over. Rethink ELA Podcast is here to provide student-tested, research-based strategies, products, and advice. Here's your host, Michelle Waters.
Welcome back to Rethink ELA Podcast. I am your host, Michelle Waters, and I am here today with Jennifer Dean, and we are going to talk about podcasting. So, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I am excited, super excited to have you here because I get to talk about something that I love. And this is kind of a little metacognitive today, since we're going to be talking about podcasting. I know I've been interested, as I mentioned in my promo earlier, been interested in podcasting for many years and have just struggled with figuring out how to bring it into the classroom. And so I'm hoping that you can help answer those questions for me and for our listeners as well. But first, could you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Well, you mentioned that I have a background in journalism. So that was my bachelor's degree was in journalism, and I had a minor in Spanish. And I worked in museum administration for a time. And then we made a move, and I had a bit of an existential crisis because what I was going to do could no longer really happen. And so I was watching the Dave Edgar's TED Talk where he talked about 826 National and had this epiphany in the bathtub of all places where I realized, no, it's either when I'm in water or driving that I have the best ideas.
Yes. Yes.
So I watched this and had this epiphany and thought, you know what? Education brings all these things that I'm really passionate about together. So I got up the next morning and applied for grad school where we were living and contacted 826 National and said, I hear you have an opening and I don't live there, but I'd love a job. And so I was hired as a researcher for their national office in San Francisco, even though I lived in Arkansas. And started working for them and realized that if I really wanted to create the types of change that I wanted to see, I needed to get in the classroom. And so I quit the graduate program that I was in and switched to a master's in teaching and have been teaching now for 5 years.
All right, excellent. So your path seems to be somewhat similar to mine. I started out with a major in journalism, although I minored in art and public relations as well. Started out with that, worked for newspapers, then went home to raise my children and started a web design and hosting company, and then decided that I could best do what I need to do in the classroom. So kind of on a similar path there. So how, for you, has having that background in journalism affected your teaching style and philosophy?
I love that you asked this question because I know you've had kind of a circuitous path too, but I felt like for so long that these were all of these disparate parts and that I was doing all of these different things that, you know, at times I was like, oh, are they ever going to connect and are they ever going to make sense? And I've really realized over the past couple of years just how valuable having that background in journalism has been and how it's always kind of been there subconsciously, even though I wasn't directly, you know, tapping into that. I think this podcast, All Girls Considered, that I started was a direct result of that experience.
Absolutely. For me, having that background, you know, I'm kind of one of those quiet people that I like to study in relative silence. And I've had to realize that my classroom needs to be more like a busy newspaper or reportering office or newspaper, you know, with right. people typing and people yelling and people on the phone. And I just need to be okay with that. And so I have to keep reminding myself of that. So one of the concepts that's really important to or close to my heart is student voice. And yes. I recognized this back when I was a reporter because everybody has a voice and everybody has a story to tell. But there's so many people out there that can't tell their stories. And so as a teacher, I want my kids to know that not only do they have a voice, but they have a story. They may not have lived it all yet, but they have a story and they can and should tell that story. And I just need to give them the tools to do so. And it sounds like that's something similar to what you're doing. So kind of what is your basic understanding of what student voice is and how you help them find their voices?
Yes. I mean, giant. Yes. I'm jumping up and down. Yes. This is this is why I got into the classroom. When I was at 826, it was so much about creating an experience for students outside of school where they could develop their voice as writers. And it just inspired me so much. And I thought, wow, the literature isn't really about that so much. So how can we kind of change the trajectory of the research and talk about what's important? And ever since I stepped into the classroom, that has been my number one priority, is how do I empower students to find and share their voice? And I really think that was the impetus for coming up with All Girls Considered, is noticing how many girls in middle school, you know, they're really trying to come into their own and find out who they are, what is their identity, and then allowing them a space to develop their voice within that is just so powerful. Yes. I mean, you know, instead of fighting with other girls or being competitive or sitting against the wall, you have this arena, you have this, you know, agency to come in and kind of take control of your life. So it has been at the heart of everything I've done for the past 5 years, from some of the PBL projects I've done. I've worked with Voice of Witness. They're an organization that does oral history publications, and we've done oral history projects in my classroom. Everything is about how do we move away from what's not important to what really is important and gives students the skills they need to be successful.
Absolutely. You mentioned Voice of Witness. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Well, it's also an organization that was created by Dave Eggers. I don't know if he ever sleeps, but it came out of an idea of, you know, creating a space for storytelling and allowing people who are marginalized in some sort of way, whose stories we don't always hear, to have a place to share their stories. So they have published a variety of books. I mean, from kind of a broad collection of oral histories to oral histories based on certain populations in our culture. And last year, I was the recipient of a grant to receive a collection of books from them and use them widely in my classroom. And then my advanced students did an oral history project at the end of the year. And then this year, I received a fellowship and we worked together to create an oral history project for kind of a different population of my students.
That sounds fascinating. I'm going to have to look into that and see if I can get involved somehow.
Oh, they're wonderful. Yeah.
Excellent. So do they have a website? Do you know that off the top of your head? or?
Oh, I think it's voiceofwitness.org, but I'm happy to look it up and send it to you.
Okay, sounds great. And I'll include that information in the show notes for our listeners as well.
Awesome.
While we're here talking about other organizations, you had mentioned 826 National. Could you tell me a little bit more about what that was?
Well, so they have a fascinating story. And if you look up the TED Talk, Dave Eggers talks about how he was a writer and he wanted to get his writing friends together and create a space where students could come in and basically get tutorials, but from actual writers. And in San Francisco, the space that they found, turns out you had to have a business out of that space. So in the front of it, they created a pirate shop.
Oh, wow.
And there's wood planks on the floor and overhead. And so they have all of these kind of ridiculously silly things, you know, that pertain to pirates that you can buy. And then the tutoring center is in the back. They have since expanded to, I want to say it's now 8 chapters throughout the country.
Oh, wow. Awesome. So I'm gonna have to look that one up as well.
yes.
So we're talking about podcasting. We're talking about student voice. I know for me, when I was in middle school, there were a lot of worksheets, a lot of grammar worksheets in particular, spelling stuff. Yeah, all that. I've talked to kids that I have now who've told me, oh yeah, we did all these worksheets. And I actually had some students tell me at the end of the year that they wanted more worksheets because they want to learn more about grammar. And I'm thinking, yeah, we'll work on the grammar, just not with a worksheet. But anyway, although, you know, if a kid wants a worksheet, fine, I will find you a worksheet. You can do your worksheet. If that helps you and makes you feel better, great. But we're also going to do some, like you mentioned, project-based learning. I know there are teachers out there, though, who kind of maybe with grammar, maybe with vocabulary, maybe with spelling, are giving worksheets because they really don't know what else to do. Or, you know, maybe they're giving those multiple choice exams because, you know, that's what everybody else does. So what advice would you give to those teachers who want to break away from the traditional ways of teaching English language arts concepts and want to spend time seeking and nurturing those student voices?
Well, I think, first of all, if you're doing things like PBL, project-based learning, there's room for all of those skills to be embedded within these projects. And any good project will be designed to allow for you to explore those skills within it. One of the things that I have found that I really like and I think makes these types of projects less intimidating for teachers who this isn't their background and allows for a lot of differentiation is to do it with a small group. So to say, okay, I have this idea for a project and I have a group of students that I think they need some sort of extension piece. I think I need to take them beyond what we've been doing in the classroom. So I'm going to have these 6 students do this project.
Okay.
And then it doesn't feel like, oh, wow, I'm managing, 100 students doing this. But you can just kind of have these little test groups.
Okay.
So that's been one way that I've helped some of the teachers on my team and in my department kind of dip their toe into some of this project-based learning. I do think that it's the type of learning that is meaningful and rigorous for students. But sometimes, you know, you mentioned the newsroom and having that chaotic environment, and there are people that's not comfortable,
right?
That they can't just jump into that kind of environment, that there's a way education has been done. There was a way their education went, and it takes a lot to move away.
Yeah. And I'm one of those people. It has taken me 5 years to get to the point where I realized, okay, we don't have to sit in rows and it doesn't have to be quiet. We can talk.
Right.
We can have a more chaotic environment. And, you know, there are still some days when I'm just like, oh my gosh, I've got to step out the hallway and, you know, not yell at a kid.
Right.
Send myself to the hallway. I'm going to breathe. I'm going to calm down. Then I'm going to go back in there and do what I know I'm supposed to do.
Well, I tend to have kind of the more, I mean, I think it's a structured chaos, and that's really, really important, is you need some sort of structure. But over the years, I've moved from kind of whole class stuff to really small group things where I can differentiate for different groups of students. And especially at the end of the year, I feel like that's really up and running. So when we just finished this school year, it was kind of ridiculous for anyone who walked in. But, you know, I had three different groups of students doing three totally different things. So, you know, we had our instructional coach walk in one day and I said, well, these students are doing an oral history project and these students are doing a book study and these students are finishing up this work over here. But it worked.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things that I do for my own sanity is during my planning period, I meditate.
Yeah.
And I pull out my phone, my app on my phone, and I start a meditation and I have at least 15 minutes to myself, which I have found really, really helps with that grounding, centering piece. So if everything's kind of, you know, chaotic-ish,
yeah.
If I can have that time to myself in the middle of my day, that really, really helps.
Absolutely. One of the things that really stops me from doing what I want to do is figuring out the logistics of this. So I love the idea of having, you know, three groups doing three different things, or, you know, having one small group working on, you know, something in particular. And I'm just trying to figure out, okay, so is that, well, it sounds like each of the groups are right there in the class and they're doing their separate projects right there in class. So is this, when you're planning for, are you planning a unit and you know, I'm going to have these three different things going, or is this just, you know these kids and you know what they need to work on and you've partnered with them and communicated with them about what it is that they need to work on? I mean, how does this look on a curriculum map? I mean, all these questions are going through my head. What advice would you give to other teachers like me with our logistical stumbling blocks?
Well, I would say the two main things are planning and flexibility. So you need to know what you're getting into before you get into it. And then once you get into it, you have to have a level of flexibility because nothing is ever perfect and nothing ever goes exactly, you know, as you planned, as we know as teachers. For the most recent oral history project that I did, it became an opt-in piece. So I invited a group of students from a select number of classes I had and said, hey, so here's kind of what I'm thinking. Would you be interested in this? And those who were interested said yes. And those who weren't said no. And I said, here is an alternative for that. We're looking to see mastery of certain skills. But the way I approached it with the students that opted in was, you're the director and I'm the producer. So you tell me what the vision is and I help facilitate that vision. Everybody has to actually do an interview and we're going to go through that whole process. But then from there, you tell me what it looks like. And they all turned out completely differently and in ways I wouldn't have even imagined. Some of them used the audio and some of them didn't even use the audio and did a visual piece to express what they learned from the person that they interviewed. And they were beautiful. They were absolutely beautiful. But I never could have imagined what some of the students, given the space to create something, would have created.
So what you're saying makes me realize that when you're trying to be that sage on the stage as a teacher, you're really limiting the kids. You're really holding them back to your own vision. And if you facilitate, if you step back and you say, okay, guys, you take this, let me know what you need, you free them to come up with some amazing things.
Absolutely. And I really think the scary part, and even for me sometimes, is the idea of doing this with all of your classes, right? So I have, you know, four classes and 95 students. How would this look different in every single class? And that's one of the ways I feel like this small group really works. We know small group instruction is where we should be as teachers. So is there a way to use it to differentiate, you know, in these skills and projects too? And I think there is.
Awesome. So we talked a little bit about, you know, balancing your personal life, and you talked about using that 15 minutes with all these small group projects going on and, you know, kids producing things. You're most likely going to have to read things or listen to them or look at them. And there's evaluation and assessment involved. How do you balance all of that, which you can't do, you know, when you're right there in front of the kids necessarily? Sometimes you can, but not always. How do you balance that and still have a personal life?
Yeah, it's hard. I haven't figured that out yet. The best thing that I have been able to come up with that has worked the best for me most of the time is to do a lot of it in person. So I'm a very conference-oriented teacher, and yes, we start practicing that at the beginning of the year. How to sign up for a conference? What does a conference mean? Why are they valuable? And so by the end of the year, when I'm doing some of these more differentiated projects, they are used to that environment and they are used to working one-on-one or in small groups. So with a lot of this type of work, you know, the questions that they have and the revisions and the feedback that you're giving happens in class. So when they turn in that final piece, you pretty much know what they're giving you.
Right.
And that's really helpful because you've been there throughout the process. So it's not this whole long grading piece.
Right.
The other thing I've learned is that grading doesn't have to look like an essay all the time. Sometimes I really want to know, do they have a good thesis statement? And sometimes I want to look at one paragraph. Or sometimes they may not be writing an essay, but, you know, like with this oral history project, they're coming up with some visual component and they're choosing quotes that are meaningful to include in this. So not everything as an English teacher has to look like a five paragraph or five page or whatever essay, which is overwhelming, right, and virtually impossible to grade.
Right. And I'm thinking too, if we are thinking beyond the classroom and the students aren't just producing their work for me to look at, if they're producing it for another audience, then it doesn't matter if I just look at one or two pieces to assess what they're doing. They are going further to maybe put it on their blog or to put it, right, in a podcast or, you know, put it out there somewhere else. And so they'll get that authentic response from an audience to the finished piece, without me having to put eyes on every single thing.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, going back to the podcast, so one of the things that's been really amazing with our groups of girls last year and this year is the more they do it, the more they figure out what they want to get better at.
Right.
And they figure that out on their own. One of the great,
yeah, and they know.
Yeah. One of the great epiphanies they had this year was, oh yeah, we're not really having a conversation. It's a Q&A session. And we think that we should be having a conversation. So what does that look like? What do we need to do? How do we need to revise our processes to, you know, make this end product what we want it to be? And they decided that they would do more research in the beginning before they interviewed and less questions. Because if they just had 20 questions, then they're stuck in that Q&A mode. But if they have five really, really good, thoughtful questions and they listen, they're going to get so much more out of it.
Absolutely. And by them coming up with that themselves and realizing, hey, this is what we need to do better, they're actually going to do it. They'll come to you and say, hey, can I work on this at home? Yeah, sure. Yeah. Like, I'm going to say no to that. they will put in the effort. You know, I've had kids that will come in, get permission to come into my class out of other classes in order to work on that project because it's authentic for them. And it's what something that they want to do and are interested in doing. And if you can do that, then again, it's amazing what the kids can do. So we've been talking about the podcast in bits and pieces. I really want to know how you started that and kind of what technology that you're using and just kind of a bit of the story behind the podcast as well.
Yeah. So it started it was the summer before the last school year. And I had a conversation with our school counselor and said, man, you know, middle school is really rough and it's really rough for girls. And I specifically wanted to be a middle school teacher because I think that if they have good opportunities and good people, they're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But I think we need to do something. And I said, you know, I've kind of thought about a podcast. Do you think that would be something that would be supported? And she said, yeah, for sure. So at the beginning of the year, it was really a ragtag operation. And it was me, and I kind of pulled another teacher friend in, and we hung up some posters and we had a meeting. And we recruited, I guess, about 5 girls mid-fall and really had to just kind of feel our way through the whole thing. I had a, you know, old MacBook that I brought in, and I knew how to use GarageBand. Mm-hmm. And we just started experimenting. And, you know, I knew a lot from my journalism background and from doing all the oral history work on, you know, researching and really good questions and then your basic, you know, English teacher things like revising and making things better and all that. Yes. So we went through all that. And the first person that we interviewed was a choir teacher in our school who just had a tremendous impact on the students. And she was the perfect first person because they had a connection with her and she was just charming and, you know, shared really valuable information. And then we started thinking, well, who else, you know we know or have a connection to, and kind of expanded. And then at the end of the year, they were all eighth graders, so they went to high school.
Oh.
And I know. And I had this realization like, oh my gosh, I don't want this to end. You know, I want these girls to have this opportunity. And so this was kind of in the back of my mind. And when we started this year, we wanted to expand into 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, both for the sustainability of the group, but also to give, you know, more opportunities to students in different grade levels. So we kind of expanded. And then in, I guess it was late fall, we interviewed Grace Bonney, who was a New York Times bestseller.
Oh, wow.
And in January, we ended up in the New York Times.
Awesome.
I know. And I had absolutely no idea that it was going to happen. Somebody I knew had tweeted something that someone else posted.
Yes,
and
yes.
It got back to me. But it was around that time when I decided that I was going to make All Girls Considered a national nonprofit.
Excellent.
And so we became a nonprofit in early February, and we are expanding into, I think, 6 total schools across the country next year.
Wow, that is amazing.
It is amazing. It's really, really exciting. And I'm so glad that it's summer now because, yes, I actually have a chance to do things I need to do. But the really, really great thing about that is that, you know, the name is All Girls Considered.
Mm-hmm.
And it felt so limiting to be 5 eighth grade girls in one school.
Right.
And I'm definitely one of those big picture people. I tend to think big and, you know, large and in the future and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But I really felt like if we were going to be All Girls Considered, we had to get to all girls.
Right.
Anyone that identified as a girl, we wanted to give them the opportunity to be a part of the organization.
Right. So I've kind of been thinking about something similar and working on something similar. And I think you and I talked about this before with Invisible Young Voices and trying to get kids, or get teachers in my case, to look out at their class and find those kids who have a story that they want to tell and have a voice, but maybe haven't been encouraged. And so that's, I think, how you and I originally connected, and kind of something that I'm, mm-hmm, one of those projects that I'm working on the side. I called it Invisible Young Voices because I didn't want it to just be about writing. I know writing is very important to me, but I also know that some kids are, you know, into video, and some kids are into podcasting, and, you know, then there are those that want to write. Well, while all of those involve writing, the end product is different. And so with that in mind, I want to kind of get back onto the topic of podcasting. You talked about having a MacBook and GarageBand. In my case, our systems are Windows, and so I've got a program called Audacity that I can record on. And then this program that we're using right now called Zencastr, if you're wanting to interview somebody that's elsewhere. What kind of microphones did you guys use?
We used the Snowball microphones.
Yep, that's what I have right now.
And we've experimented with different types of things. And one of the things we're trying to figure out going into new schools next year, we're doing a pilot program where, you know, this handful of schools is going to come on board and kind of help us figure out how we want to expand in the future. But everyone's going to have their own equipment.
Okay.
So we're going to be, you know, figuring out and navigating, well, you have this equipment, but you have this equipment. So what works, what doesn't work. And I'm looking forward to it because it's really been a learning experience for me. I don't have a background in tech, and I don't have a background, you know, in radio or podcasting. So I'm learning a lot as we go about how to make things better and how to improve upon what we already have.
So those pilot schools that are you're pulling in, what is it that you're doing to help them get started with this program?
We are providing a toolkit for the schools that will include all of the information that we've learned along the way. So everything from how do I decide to form a chapter? What does it look like to recruit and sustain members? How do we find people to interview? Mm-hmm. Who's got a story? Who has different types of stories? How do we come up with interview questions? How do we have these conversations? How do we edit? How do we, you know, all of these different components that we have figured out along the way that will allow our new chapters to come on and get started much quicker than we could last year. You know, that was a 6-month process trying to figure out how to make everything right. work. The other thing is that we will provide both in-person and interwebs-based support for all of the schools. So I will go and help each school get set up at the beginning of the year, and then we'll have opportunities for feedback and check-in and support throughout the year.
Okay, excellent. Is there anything else that you would like to add? Anything that a teacher who wants to get involved in something in a podcast or something similar to this, or is just wanting to find those student voices that are hiding in their classes. Anything else that you would like to add to help them?
I think one of the things is keep your eyes and ears open all the time and build those relationships with your students and figure out what is it that they need. If I wasn't getting to know my students and if I wasn't listening, I wouldn't have thought we need a podcast. I wouldn't have thought we need an opportunity for these girls to hear the stories of inspiring women. So I think that there are opportunities everywhere to help kids. You just have to be tuned in and believe in yourself enough to create something meaningful.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you being here and sharing your story with us. And I know this will help my listeners better be able to pull out those voices that their students have.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been lovely.
Thank you.
Encourage your high school students to share their stories, discuss building a representative society, and develop their writing skills. With this set of 15 highly engaging lesson plans, you can mix and match to meet your students' needs. Download this unit at rethinkela.com/sjwp.